Hi, I'm Leon Hines, and this is How to Fall Apart, a podcast about picking up the pieces. My guest today is the author Sophie White. We're talking about recovery from addiction, about the decision to stop drinking, the first year of sobriety, and how sometimes the later years can be harder. Thank you so much for listening, and thank you to Sophie for her time and for producing this podcast. Okay, so what I wanted to ask you first was when you first realised that you had a problem with drink. I remember, if you can cast your mind back to when we were in our phase of working in the Westwood gym reception area.
Mm.
And you said to me one day, you started saying you were going to go to a meeting. And it was really out of the blue, if you don't mind me saying this.
No.
And
I don't know what you're about to say.
Well, that, you said you hadn't told anyone and you were thinking of going to an AA meeting. And I remember you were kind of looking at me quite nervously as if like, what do you think about this? And
really?
Yeah.
This is so weird. I have no memory of that at all. But I remember when I told you that I had been going to AA.
Okay.
And I remember it being, I mean, listen to us, Westwood Gym, Saba. We were in Saba having dinner. And I feel like I told you that's Saba, but maybe I didn't.
You just said at the time, it was like you were kind of testing it out, like, well, how would somebody react to this? And it's like, I'm thinking of going to a meeting. You didn't even say AA first, you were like, a meeting. I think it took me a while to realise, what are you talking about?
Why was I being so obtuse? Yeah. I'm going to a room. Something might happen there.
People will maybe meet in the room. Yeah.
They might all have a common problem.
So tell me about that, about like, how you got in your own head even to the point of there's a problem here and then getting to the point of I'm going to address it.
I feel like it was a very slow process that actually started probably 20 years before that. We don't mind having a cat on the podcast. You're looking at me like, what do we do about the cat? We'll have her put down.
She's got to go. I've already put one out into the back room.
I think she's great.
Yeah, if
she scared the living shit out of me a minute ago because I was sitting here looking directly at you across the table, and then this touch on my shoulder, single paw. So anyway, it definitely started quite a bit before that. Mm. I think the first time that I had the thought about am I an alcoholic was in 2014, when I really, really vividly remember Googling am I an alcoholic, which the very act of asking a question like that off the internet is kind of answering your own question, I guess.
And why were you Googling it? What was going on at that point?
I think that I'd had a like this kind of ambient kind of knowledge that I didn't drink like other people. Mm. And from like the first drink that I ever had,
really?
I feel that I kind of from the off did not drink like other people.
And what was it like that first drink?
It was, again, this is going to be very probably like, yeah, you didn't drink like other people. It was straight vodka.
Okay.
And it was, just like out of a bottle at a party, and I was 13. And again, like, I think it's all, I think we grow up in a country where it's also normalized.
Mm.
You, depending on who you grow up with in terms of your friends, these things can be so normalized. Mm. And then you yourself do like an athletic level of normalizing to tell yourself that it's all okay. And of course, this is fine. And there's nothing odd about it, you know? So, like,
What was the feeling that drink gave you that first time that maybe you can look back now?
Oh, I just remember having this, like, really, really kind of, like, cellular level response to the alcohol, where it just felt like sort of like a lock sliding home. Like a, you know, like fitting a piece perfectly into a jigsaw. I mean, it was just this kind of like instant, like satisfaction and relief. Mm. Like, I really vividly remember thinking, okay, this exists. I'm going to be fine. Everything's going to be fine as long as I always have this.
Okay.
And like, that was a strange thought for like a 13-year-old to have. But like, your strange thoughts, like, it takes a long time for them to be revealed as strange. Mm. Do you know that kind of way?
Yeah.
Like, I went around, like, pretty much, like, most of my life thinking everyone, for example, had, like, had thoughts of killing themselves. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, everyone, like, blanket 100% of people thought about killing themselves. Mm. And then it was, like, I was quite a bit older when I remember, I think it was a therapist saying to me, like, you know, there's people who really haven't. Mm. I was really blown away by that. Mm. And I guess as well with the drinking, like from the off, I thought, okay, all everyone wants to ever do is drink, clearly.
Mm.
Like life is just this annoying thing we have to do in between.
Mm-hmm.
And tap out the hours between drinking.
Okay.
And that kind of through my teens and stuff, like, I obviously was like hindered by just like family and school and things like that. Mm. And, you know, I was really lucky. I had a really stable home and, you know, really good parents and like really, really great on all those levels. But I do kind of think that like addiction, I do think kind of is in you.
Mm.
Like, and it will be, I think, triggered by whatever the thing ultimately is. Okay. Do you know that kind of way? Okay. And I think that we can kind of bring the addiction into all kinds of different like areas and substances. And, you know, like I do think, like people say, oh, I have an addictive personality.
Mm.
And I think, like, I've never experienced addiction to be like a personality. I've always felt it like on a really kind of like, you know, like bone level.
Okay.
Of like, I'm like unbalanced and this thing balances me. Mm. Or like I have a hole and this thing like appears to fill the hole. Or, you know, like it always felt a bit like alcohol brought me up to being on a level that was like more normal or more like on the level with other people.
Yeah.
Which is really ironic because there was really nothing normal about how I drank. Like, especially as well, like this is one that's really common in recovery is people realizing that, for example, there are people who, like I was describing earlier, going through life, you know, never having thoughts of taking their own life. There are people who have never blacked out from drinking.
Yeah.
And like that for, I think, a lot of alcoholics, you realize that and you're like, oh, you know.
Mm.
And like, again, I feel like I was embarrassingly old, like learning a lot of these lessons. But like, you know, it's again, I think it just comes back to that thing of like when you're an addict, you'll do anything to protect your substance, and you are protecting it from like the kind of the sort of social norms of like nobody must see me drinking wine at 12 p.m. on my own in my house.
Mm.
And then you're also protecting your addiction from the some part of yourself, I think.
Okay.
Because looking at it, you know, and having to look at it like threatens it. And like, I think that's the thing with addiction. It's for me, like, I feel like sometimes we think of it in terms of it being like a chase, like they describe chasing a high and things like that. And like, I always think of it more as being like this thing that I have to kind of like protect against all odds. And
okay,
like even if that's protecting it from like, you know, like from myself and from getting help, and you know,
okay,
because if you kind of if you bring it out into the light, you'll have to do something about it. Do you know that kind of way?
Okay.
And I do think a lot of people, like these kinds of like addiction for me was like never about going out and having fun, like at all. Like it got to the point in my drinking where it was more annoying to go out
around
and
drink people,
because it's so much work to go out and pretend to not be an alcoholic when you're an alcoholic.
Oh yeah, I remember I never noticed anything before you told me, but there was one night looking back where we were going to a thing and I had driven in and I said, oh yeah, I've parked the car, I'm not driving. And you were really cross, I could see. And looking back, I'm thinking, that was odd. Like, why would it mean anything to Soph? And I end up going, oh, sure, okay, we'll go for a few drinks. And it was like a tenner in the car park. So I was like, I'll leave it overnight.
Mm.
And it was only when you said it to me, I was like, that's what that was, that you were,
You were interfering with my plan.
Yeah.
And like I said, then you kind of, I did kind of pack it in terms of like drinking that much in front of other people, yeah, and would instead, you know, really just kind of keep myself tapped up on my own.
And
it was, like I said, not really like, some people do drink for like confidence or like to kind of help with social anxiety and things like that. And like, I really didn't. You know, I just really, really drank to turn down the volume on life. And I don't know what it is about me, but I just can't or couldn't seem to tolerate life without it or without something. And the thing is as well, like I'd kind of already sort of had a sort of whole sort of episode with drugs and stuff when I was younger. So in a lot of ways, I thought my problem was drugs.
Yeah.
And I had stopped drugs when I was 22. And I'd also stopped drinking for a good stretch in my 20s, which I think as well reinforced in my mind, oh, I'm okay with drink. Like drinking's fine, you know.
There was some kind of control. You could stop if you wanted to.
Well, here I had stopped for that whole time, so I must be fine. You know, that kind of way.
And tell me so when you...
But then when I came back to drinking, it was really quickly that I came to that day when I Googled it.
Okay.
So I think I went back to drinking in about 2012.
Yeah.
Or so.
And it escalated very fast.
And I had say I'd had a breakdown when I was, it was 2007.
Mm.
So there had been that kind of stretch of from about the age of 22 to 27 where I, no drugs, no drinking, was very careful about how I lived, but I was very unwell still. Like I was really like unstable anyway in my mind. So it wasn't like having 5 years of like clean and sober and fucking up with the larks and like feeling great.
Mm.
It was 5 years of kind of white knuckling through just daily life because my mind was fucked. I had been diagnosed, you see, with drug-induced psychosis, which really, with hindsight now, it's probably more likely that I was just experiencing, you know, the kind of real beginning manifestations of bipolar, which is what I've been diagnosed with since. Anyway, sorry, jumping around a bit here. But basically, I think I went back drinking around 27, 28. And it would have only been like 2 years later that I first Googled.
You mean you went back drinking in 2012 and then Googled in 14?
Yeah.
And but you didn't stop drinking for another kind of 4 years after that. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I had to really find out for sure. I just wanted to really fuck myself.
Pretty normal. Yeah. We don't get it the first time. So what happened the 4 years later to actually make you?
I think that the kind of descent, like, it just ramped up and up. Like, it just felt like the truth was just getting, well, okay, so I always kind of think of it a bit like this. If you're trying to like manage an addiction in secret, and what I mean by manage is not like cure it, but tend to it like you would a garden, a really fucked up garden. But like, if you're trying to serve your addiction and be active in your addiction and also trying so hard to keep fucking lid on it, keep it looking like you're normal, keep everything in your life looking like it's normal, everything's okay. It's such hard work. It's exhausting. I actually have no idea how I had time for anything else. I don't know how I had time for any of my other breakdowns. I don't know how I have time to do my job.
Write about 5 books.
Have kids. Like, it just is so exhausting. Like, you're just, because you're kind of engaged in this constant mental calculation of like, when can I have my next drink? How do I need to organize my entire day to make sure that I can drink? How do I make sure that I don't have to drive somewhere, for example, later? How do I make sure, I can't talk to that person because they saw me drinking last week and I have to like kind of cool off with them for a bit in case they notice anything as
really
off. Yeah, like you get really compartmentalizey.
Okay.
And you get really deceptive and, you know, you're lying to everyone and yourself. Do you know what I mean? And all of that is going on underneath a kind of a veneer, you know, of, but obviously that thing, that whole veneer kind of starts to crumble. But it feels basically a bit like setting fire like to something in the room of your house, and then you spend like all of your waking hours just trying to keep the fire contained and keep the fire from getting out of control.
Yeah.
And like, it's just that, it's just exhausting. And I think just kind of year on year, my kind of rules just started to kind of just crumble a bit, you know, like, so you kind of have these rules to kind of convince yourself that you're okay. So like, you know, I'm not going to drink before 6 p.m. Also, I'm kind of aware that like my rules, quote unquote rules, might sound to other people like really shocking, because some people might be like, 6 p.m. What do you mean? Like, I wouldn't drink on a weekday, or do you know what I mean? Everyone has a totally different kind of metric for these things. But like, so I probably would have been like, oh, you know, I won't drink before 6 p.m. and I will not kind of, what are the other kind of, I'm trying to remember the healthier, quote unquote healthier rules I used to have. Like, probably like
around the kids.
Yeah, yeah. And then just after a while, like 6 p.m. which is kind of becomes 5 p.m. And then it's like, then it's lunchtime, but it's only wine at lunchtime. And then like, after a while, you're like, oh God, like I've now, you know, at one point I decreed that like I wouldn't drink red wine anymore because it's too much of a tell.
Okay.
With all the staining. So I switched to white wine, which I had never even liked. And, you know, you just start to realize that like all of this is in the pursuit of something entirely different to what alcohol is really intended for.
Yeah.
Do you know the way?
Yes, I do.
And so I think the last year was when it really just like kind of went into this real kind of like, you know, just death spiral of like, I'd fucked all the rules out the window. I truly didn't care so much of the time about, you know, it's just everything became an obstacle.
Yeah.
Like that I just needed to get through or get around in order to get what I needed, you know? And that's really sad. It's like a really, really lonely existence.
Yeah.
Like that's one of the things when you're living in a lie, nobody knows you. And the people that around you that they think they do, you've just, they make you sad because you know that they don't. And you feel on such a kind of a gut level that like you're really, you're like, you know, wholly bad person, undeserving of anything good in your life. Like it's, you know, it just kind of really does. It's like an accelerant kind of, I thought sometimes like kind of like being with my family, you know, would really like depress me because I did feel like I was operating at such a distance, really, even from just in the room, you know?
Yeah.
And I'd often, like, and it's funny, I wrote about this in an essay recently about how, like, affection for my kids, and I still have to kind of work with this, work on this kind of thing, but it kind of triggers this kind of real knee-jerk kind of, like, shame and, like, sort of disgust with myself. And it's, and this sense of undeserving. I'm undeserving of this beautiful child, like, loving me, you know? Like, just such a kind of a rotten person, you know? And, yeah, so, like, that last year, it just, I just got so, so lonely. Like, it's just a really isolating existence, you know? And, like, sometimes, sorry, I've been talking for fucking hours straight. You asked me a question about 4 days ago.
So you decided to stop.
Yeah, like I kind of had a sort of final night that is very vivid to me. And I hope it's my final night. Like that's a real kind of, I suppose, recovery thing, but it is a real thing. Like you're only really ever, you know, just in a reprieve from it.
Yeah.
Like, because I'm of the school that like you're an addict and that isn't like something that can be cured.
Yeah.
There is loads of different perspectives on it. And I absolutely don't judge anyone else's.
Yeah.
It's just like for me in my recovery and also from just how I've experienced addiction to be, I believe it's like really innately in me.
Yeah.
And won't ever not be. I don't think I could ever like come back to alcohol or drugs and like manage it.
Okay.
Though I often think if I live to like 90, I'm going to do some Class A's. And like,
fair enough.
That's, I'll have earned that. No, it's so funny because you do, especially in early sobriety, I used to say those kinds of things to myself. Like,
really?
I'll be sober for this amount of time and I'll be okay. And then I can, you know, because it's so hard to cope with the idea of never again.
Yeah.
And that's why they do say day at a time. And it's funny though, because over the years it's changed shape. And now I'm really repelled by the idea
of drinking
and like drunk and all of that, just really...
Did you start going to AA straight away?
No. So I got to this one night. It was in, it was the 28th of April, 2018.
Mm.
It was actually it was like a week out from my dad's first anniversary of being dead.
Mm.
And it obviously had been this kind of very kind of scalding year of very raw, very painful. And I obviously decided to dial that up by being really, really accomplished alcoholic during the whole thing.
Yeah, you'd had an awful time.
Yeah, it had been a shit time. And the thing is, like, when you're an alcoholic, you, you know, you drink because you're having such a hard time. And you drink because you're having a happy time. Something's happy is happening. Mm. And then you drink just because you're bored. And every one of these things can then be kind of like, you know, wielded as a great reason. You got all your reasons, you know. And so I remember just having this thing one night. I don't even know if I had this big working up to this or when the thought occurred to me, but I found that I had this really strong desire to just like find the bottom of this thing. So I'd always had the sensation that I never, ever had quite hit enough of, you know, drinking, like... Like, it just always, it never, ever, you see, was satisfied. It was never, like, quenched, you know? Like, it was just, like, just being just hungry.
Okay.
Like, never, ever feeling like it had done the trick. And I felt like I often was kind of in a quest of, like, experimenting with, like, how many bottles of wine did I need to have that would finally turn this thing off?
Mm.
And having this really, like, it sounds naive, but, like, weirdly felt very kind of, like, reasonable that there was an end point if I could just find it.
Yeah.
And anyway, so this, my husband was away and I very much leaned into this and was like, I am going to find the bottom of this. And I really was so hopeless. I was just so, it just is like everything else. It's was so far away from me. And like, I feel obviously so ashamed of this, but my kids were upstairs asleep. And like, if something had happened, like I wouldn't have been able to help them. And like often I'm like, I deserve something to have happened because what I did was so unforgivable. But I just sat down that night and I was just like, I'm going to fucking drink and I'm going to find out how much it takes to just turn this fucking thing off. And I just fucking like... drank to blackout, and when I, you know, woke up, I just remember just having this really, like, sort of scary realization that, well, A, what it had brought me to in terms of what I'd done, and then scary because I realized, like, this thing had no end. Like, I hadn't touched the bottom of it.
Thank you so much to everyone for listening so far. The rest of this interview will only be available to subscribers. So if you'd like to subscribe to How to Fall Apart Substack, you'll be able to hear the rest of it there.